Welcome to the CDG BizCast. I'm your host, Christian Gonzalez, co-owner of Creativity Design Group, a digital marketing firm in Houston, Texas. Today, as we move along in our series about how business owners can prepare themselves for the holiday season, we are going to discuss a very important topic. We're going to discuss cybersecurity. As business owners, it's important to know how you can provide a safe, secure shopping environment for your customers. You want to make sure that your customers can shop online through your website or transmit personal information over your website without the fear of it being hacked or stolen. We are also going to discuss how consumers can keep themselves safe as well while doing their holiday shopping. We all know that around Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and of course Christmas time, there is already a lot of heavy shopping going on. Shopping begins before the shopping season actually starts, so it's important to make sure that your customers are ready to browse your website, place all their orders, and of course ensure that they can feel safe and confident knowing that their information is not going to get compromised. Joining us today are information security analysts Pierre and Kelvin, who will be discussing some important cybersecurity tips for both consumers and business owners who conduct business online. Also joining us is our awesome BizCast panelist in the United Kingdom, Sarah Russell, who will discuss her ordeal as an identity theft victim. She will describe how she handled it, recovered, and became triumphant in the end. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hello, Christian. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Christian. Thank you for having us.
Hey, Christian. Thank you for having us on the show.
It certainly is wonderful to have you guys on, especially for your first time. So I would like to ask you guys to please tell us about yourselves and your background and let the listeners know what you specialize in, what credentials you have, and what your areas of expertise are.
My name is Kelvin. I'll try to keep it, you know, short and brief. I'm an information security analyst, and I've been in this industry for about 5 years in consulting, you know, business operations and risk management. I currently manage my company's vendor risk management, you know, like conducting security assessments on our vendors before procuring their services. In regards to certifications and stuff like that, I'm certified in risk and information systems control. So that's just a little bit about myself. Like I said, I'll try to keep it brief, short, precise.
My name is Pierre. I'm currently an IT security analyst as well. Just a little bit about my background. I am from the Houston area, got my education from the University of Houston. I've been in the cybersecurity world for about 4 years now, going into my fifth. I have experience working on security monitoring and auditing, experience in performing risk analysis, continuous monitoring, prom tracking, and also, you know, help write and develop policies and procedures. You know, one of my main roles that I also do is a security control analysis to help organizations go through their security controls and make sure that they are meeting the requirements of the control. So that's also one of my fortes that I specialize on. So that's a little bit about myself and a little bit about my background. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a victim of cybercrime. I'm here in the UK. I'm one of the usual panelists that's on Christian's show, and I shall be telling you more later about what happened and how it all ended.
Once again, welcome to the CDG BizCast. We are going to be discussing some important tips and tricks that business owners and consumers alike can use to help themselves stay secure. First, we are going to go over some information that business owners can find helpful in ensuring that they are maintaining security standards to ensure that their customers are shopping on their website safely. I know that there's a lot that comes into play when it comes to ensuring that your website is secure. So my first question for you guys is, what should business owners be doing to actively ensure that their websites are secure, especially during peak periods like the holidays? Now, it's important to make sure that the websites are secure year-round. It's not just for the holidays, it's just that they can expect to see heavier traffic than usual around this time of the year. And as a result, there are probably stronger attempts by hackers to steal personal information. Large corporations with large e-commerce platforms such as Walmart and Amazon and eBay, they get a lot of traffic every year. These are Fortune 500 companies. They're multi-billion dollar corporations. They have the money and the means to keep their platform secure. But sometimes they do get hacked, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But when you're a small business owner, you don't necessarily have the resources to have that level of security that larger corporations have. So, what would you say business owners should be doing, once again, to actively ensure their websites are secure, especially during peak periods?
Christian, that's a very, very good question. And in the security industry, we know that like around December, time for holiday, for, you know, people to spend time with their families and their loved ones, typically, you know, like there aren't a lot of security personnel like in the office or, you know, like working. So that period of time is very, very vulnerable, especially also people are purchasing so many things at the same time. So I think that there are a set of security best practices that business owners can take, you know, especially the ones that don't have enough funds to operate. Pierre touched on this a little bit, like regular security audits, making sure that you conduct frequent security audits to identify vulnerabilities. Because if you don't know what's wrong, it's very, very hard to fix anything. So making sure that you perform regular security audits. Another thing that I believe even just regular consumers, we tend to not pay attention to is updating our softwares for our phones. Apple pushes security softwares, updates, and a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this as well, we don't update our softwares. So for business owners, making sure that you update your softwares, keep all website softwares, you know, plugins and frameworks updated to the latest version, that can minimize any vulnerabilities within systems that hackers could potentially find and use to exploit those vulnerabilities. And then in turn, as a business owner, you're out for a loss. I just wanted to bring our attention to those two.
Just to add on what Kelvin was touching on how business owners should ensure that the website is secure during, you know, peak holiday breaks, as, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving or, you know, New Year's or whatever holiday we're in. A couple more things that you can do as a business owner, whether small or large. One thing that you can do to definitely help ensure your security is to set up regular backups to your website data to minimize damage in case of security breach. That's something that's going to be very helpful. Another thing is that you can implement monitoring tools. There are various monitoring tools out there that you can implement into your security to help detect vulnerabilities and alert you in case of any breaches. And if you don't know which vulnerability tools you think would be best for your system, is, you know, you can easily just, you know, Google them, the security tools that you might need to your system to see which one is compatible. Another thing that you can also do to help ensure that your security is up to date during breach holiday season, you can also update your password. Make sure that everyone in your company or organization, employees from top to bottom down, have constantly updating their passwords, changing it so that, you know, it can reduce the risk of having a breach or having any kind of vulnerabilities. Also just implementing two-step authentication password, which would help with extra security when it comes to making sure that the right users are logging in into your system or you have the right privileged account that are logging in into your software. So those are just a little bit more things that you can do as a business to help improve your security, especially in times of the holiday season when phishing attacks and world attacks and stuff like that are particularly at a high point.
Yes, that's true. Threats do become more apparent as the peak seasons become upon us. And Sarah, I would like to ask you, as a consumer, what do you do to make sure that whatever website you're browsing is secure? What steps do you take to ensure that you are using a safe website? And what do you look for if you see a red flag that makes you feel uncomfortable on that website, or you just don't want to browse it or send any information over it? What do you do?
Well, Christian, what I do is if I'm searching online, the first thing I do is look at the top left-hand corner. If there's no padlock there at the corner, I know that's not a safe website to start with. So I won't even attempt to go into it. So that's the first thing. I go in and make sure that's 100%. That's there. So then if you go on, then you go on the website. And then if you see pages and say you was looking at something, say it was a cupboard, for instance, or a wardrobe, and you clicked on the picture and the picture didn't really move and didn't look right, then wasn't like a link to anything, then that would be a red flag to me that that wasn't actually a true website. And when you click that picture, it's probably taking you on, they're getting your details, the hackers or whatever, whoever's created the website. So there's quite a number of things you want to look for. The website addresses, if the top it's all, you know, it's not proper. When you hover over, most of the time should be like a proper email address and not this gobbledygook where you have a jumble of letters and numbers. But yeah, I'd mainly look for the padlock. And if I can't click into anything like on a picture and it takes me to that product, then I know that's not a proper website. And then I'll come out and then I'll clear the whole browsing data and I'll do a virus scan quickly just to clear my computer. So that's basically what I do.
Those are all very good steps to take. It's also important, also, if you can browse with a VPN turned on, that'll give you an extra layer of security. And I want to go back to what you said about the padlock. That padlock represents what's called an SSL certificate. That means that your information is being transmitted securely over their server. So if hackers try to get it, they can't get to it. Think of it like a firewall. A firewall keeps hackers out of your computer. An SSL is similar in a way to where it has this layer of security that protects any information that's being transmitted over it. So if you see a padlock that is red or it says not secure, depending on what browser you use, those are websites that you do not want to use, much less fill out any forms on. If you fill out a form on a website that does not have SSL on it, chances are your information is going to get stolen. It's going to get compromised. The moment you see that, back away immediately. And for business owners, you need to have SSL on your website, because not only for security reasons, but Google does consider it a major ranking factor. It's been a ranking factor for close to a decade now. And they do blacklist websites that do not have SSL. They push them further and further down list of results, and then eventually they just disappear. So there's no reason at all for you not to have an SSL certificate on your website. And we're going to talk about some more stuff like that in just a little bit, but I would like to go to my next question for you guys, and that is, where do business owners commonly drop the ball when it comes to ensuring their websites are secure? What do they often forget to do, or often simply don't do, even though it's important? What do they neglect when it comes to cybersecurity?
I would go back to what I previously said, regular updates, website softwares, plugins. I don't think a lot of people pay attention to that. In regards to the SSL certificate, that can expire. So business owners have to take the initiative and make sure that they renew the SSL certificates. There are a lot of different vendors out there that verify this domain as, you know, like the proper domain, because obviously we do have bad actors or hackers out there trying to impersonate different websites to try to steal customers' information or even business owners' information. And so making sure that you renew your SSL certificate or purchase an SSL certificate with the correct vendor. Also using weak or easily guessable passwords for admin access portals that you own as a business owner definitely puts you in the position where bad actors can easily break into your system, and they'll be able to have access to whatever information that you find confidential. So like if it's your customer's data that you deem as super confidential and detrimental to your company, if it's that important to your company, and if that was to get into a bad actor's hands, that could, I guess, destroy their reputation and destroy your company or your business, then you're doing yourself a disservice by using like an easily guessable password for your admin softwares or interfaces. I think that that's something as well that we have to take into an account, and not just for business owner, for everybody as well, like individually, for your banking accounts, everything, your social media accounts. I'm a big advocate for doing things like that. So
yeah, and just to add on that, I really want to stress that business owners need to have some kind of monitoring system in place to detect and to respond to potential threats and suspicious activities, because having any kind of a monitoring device is definitely going to help your system or your infrastructure become more strengthened in terms of security breaches and hacks. And also another thing that I want to stress about is also a lot of business owners don't understand that you have to do training on an annual basis. You have to train security practices to your employees from top to bottom, because the only way you can get better as an organization or as a company is to make sure that the security practices are being preached on a regular basis, are being practiced on a regular basis, and are being applied on a regular basis. So an only way for your security to get better as a business owner or as a company or from what level you come from is to make sure that you are implementing these security practices from top to bottom. You have to make sure that there are trainings that are being preached and trainings that are being taken from a yearly basis. That is only way and the best way to make sure that your organization is staying on top of security and is also practicing the right kind of security. As we see in the cybersecurity industry, we have new models, new policies, procedures, new practices, new monitoring systems that are coming out every day. So you have the only way to stay up to date is to make sure that you are on an annual basis, making sure that from top to bottom as an infrastructure, you are updating your employees and your organization or security practices and security trainings.
Very well said. Basically, companies should implement a neighborhood watch style mindset. You know, like with a neighborhood watch, you've got neighbors looking out for suspicious activity on their street. So pretty much the same thing, but with cybersecurity, making sure that they know about what to look for in terms of red flags, how to maintain confidentiality securely, and things like that.
Yes, definitely. And the only way to help with that is to make sure that you have, you know, for instance, security and awareness training. Those kind of trainings can be very helpful to your employees to watch out for things like phishing attacks. So that is very important. Well said.
And Sarah, where do you as a consumer feel business owners are dropping the ball when it comes to making sure their customers are safe?
Well, really, a lot of the time it is to do with the website when you can't access them properly, or you have these chatbots, which sometimes can be a bit too personal. They can ask too many details that really a human should be asking and not a robot. I think chatbots are good for certain things, but not all things. So that is not safe when you're giving your details to a robot. It's almost like you're just saying, oh yeah, yeah, it's all my bank details. Just take that, you know, that's not good. And the fact that here in the UK now we have a two-step verification when we buy products, which is good. So what happens is when you buy something online now, you get a two-step verification sent to your phone, and it's a one-time passcode, and you put that in. So it's only you who can put that in and process the order, and that's after you know it's a proper website. So you know that if you get a call saying give us a one-time passcode and you're not even on a website, you're not searching anything, you're at work or you're out and about and you think, hang on a minute, that's not right. You know someone's hacking in your account. But other than that, I mean, for what I use, I just use it for just buying anything I see if I can't get it in the shops. So
that's really a great point, Sarah. And that was one of the things that I did talk about was the two-step authentication password. It's very helpful to help prevent security breaches because, you know, you do have to go through two steps verifications to get into that specific account. Also, expanding your password. A lot of people don't know this, but if you just change your password from a 5 to 6 to a 14 to 15 characterization, that can make a big difference. You know, your password is longer, which makes it harder for people to guess. So something as that simple can be overlooked.
Make a big difference.
Yes.
I do want to touch on something that you said as well, Sarah, the chat box thing. I have a buddy who used to work for a healthcare company, and they had a chat box on their website. Now, with the way that, you know, like companies work with so many different vendors that provide services to them. So for this specific company, the chat box was a different vendor that was giving them the services of the chat box. And one of the things that he realized was they were also providing services to EU-UK customers. And when it comes down to EU-UK, data privacy laws and all of that, all of those are different. And he realized that internally, his company hadn't signed a DPA with the vendor that was providing the services. So before he came around, you know, he came to the company, this vendor, obviously, that was providing the chatbot services, had access to, you know, EU-UK customers data. And his company didn't know that they had, I guess, a vulnerability on their side, which was not signing a DPA data processing agreement with this vendor. So it's very, very important when it comes down to things of that nature. Business owners, small business owners, big business owners, we tend to overlook privacy laws as well, and making sure that we have the correct wording and contracts when it comes down to security, it's very, very important.
Yes, and the purpose of this episode is to really hone in on those little things that get overlooked, because I really would like to see business owners look deeper into their cybersecurity issues to make sure that they are taking care of every aspect they possibly can. It does often get overlooked simply because they're not knowledgeable in this area. We can't really blame them for not being knowledgeable because it's just not their area of expertise, but we want to help with that. We want to help them see what they can do to make sure that they're in compliance with certain laws. They're ensuring that their customers' data is handled securely. Honestly, in my opinion, when it comes to transmitting data, I believe it should be done with stricter security than a bank. And I also want to talk about passwords too. A lot of people like to use very easy to remember passwords, and that's a security risk. There are such things as password crackers, which are programs that can be written by hackers to obtain easy to remember or pronounce passwords, because the easier they are to remember, the easier it is for these programs to guess them. And if you use password managers like Dashlane, for example, when you fill out a form to create an account, it will recommend a password to you. And it's usually a really long 20 or more character password with a lot of symbols and numbers. There aren't any English words in it. It's just a random string of character symbols and numbers. And those are the passwords that are impossible to crack due to how cryptic they are. Versus if you have a password with an English word, these programs can easily guess them.
You are 100% right about that. A lot of people obviously want to use the same passwords. And my parents are obviously, you know, like a bit older. So they tend to use or reuse the same passwords over and over on different sites. So I've seen them having the same exact passwords that they used to log in into their banking information. The same password could be used on their social media, like Facebook, right? And I think this goes across the board. Like you said, Christian, people just don't know. I have an iPhone, and Apple has this feature where it remembers your passwords. You don't necessarily have to remember these passwords yourself. You can have a password manager. For me, I have everything in my phone in the Apple password manager, where like it creates a random string of characters and makes it complex, right? These are security best practices. These things are what we urge customers and just regular people to implement in their daily lives, as well as, you know, like in organizations as well, like business owners, making sure that their employees are following these security best practices. So we don't have to remember passwords anymore, right? Because a whole bunch of companies, Google can remember your passwords for you. And whenever you go to the website that you're looking to go on, it will automatically just pop in because it remembers this is the domain and this is the password. And then it encrypts it. So if, let's say, a bad hacker or a bad actor gets access to it, they don't know the password because it's encrypted, it's hashed. And there's no way of reversing a hash function. Yeah, you're definitely correct, Christian.
Yes, I can't stress the importance enough of having strong passwords. I get a lot of clients for website design all the time here at CDG. They always want to use their own password, even though the system, which is usually the hosting panel, the cPanel, often recommends a cryptic password. They always want to use their own simple password instead of the secure password recommended by cPanel. I always tell them to use the secure password because this will ensure that your website stays secure, and it's just one step closer closer to being secure from hacking attempts. Other ways I've noticed business owners are dropping the ball is that a lot of them, because they don't really understand computers too well, and this doesn't apply for everyone, but several of them, they often use outdated versions of Windows. I see people using Windows 7, Windows 8, and if you really want to push things back, even to this very day in 2023, I am still seeing people using Windows XP, and they're still using it to connect to the internet and conduct business and whatnot. Now, if that's not a security risk, I don't know what is. That leads me into my next question for you guys. In the event of a major data breach, what is the very first thing business owners should do?
In the event of a major breach, what the first thing business owners, what you should do, you should have an incident response plan, right? As a business owner, which typically involves several steps. So like, let's say if your computer you store customers' card information on has been compromised and it's connected to your network, making sure that you isolate that affected system from your network so that you can prevent, you know, unauthorized access to like different systems that you have on the network as well. It's very, very important to isolate that and, you know, just take that off the network. Notifying relevant stakeholders. If you have an IT department or legal advisor, security team, if not, I'm pretty sure there's a way that you can find a security person or an IT person or a legal advisor that can help you along the way. Also contacting law enforcement, like the police, they can help you as well. And then after all of that, after figuring out what the issue was, you do something you call a post-incident analysis. You figure out what went wrong and how the incident happened, what was the vulnerability that this bad person or bad actor used to create the incident for you, and making sure that after that, you put security measures so that the likelihood of that happening again would be lower. So it's very, very important to follow this framework.
An incident response plan is a perfect way to respond to any kind of a vulnerability within your system. I would also say a contingency plan is also important. A contingency plan in cybersecurity is a plan that's designated to as a plan B in case of any future events or any circumstances that was to happen that would be unfavorable to the organization or to the security. So it's also good to have a good contingency plan in place for your organization and for your infrastructure to make sure that in case of any, like I said, unwanted event was to happen or any surprises was to happen in the future, you would have that plan B in place for your organization to be able to keep things afloat. So it's always good to have that kind of contingency plan. It's also called like a plan B in case, you know, like we said, any security breaches could happen or any vulnerabilities that could emerge within your infrastructure. So that's also a good thing to have as a business.
Yes, it's very important to make sure that you have a contingency plan to act on in the event something disastrous like this happens.
Yes.
Sarah, my question for you is, as a consumer, what would you do in the event of a major data breach? Let's say that your information was stolen via an unsecure website. What's the first thing you would do once you found out about this?
First of all, I'd get on to my bank who own my card, cancel my card straight away. I would tell them that I've probably been hacked, my details have probably been stolen, and they're probably going to try and take money out of my account. So I'd say, put everything on hold, don't do anything. I'd then phone the police, the cyber police, because we've got cyber police department here, which is run by the Metropolitan Police. Crime Stoppers, they do have a cyber section, which you report any spam site or any phishing or any dodgy scam emails or anything like that. You send them to them for them to investigate. So yeah, I'd probably get onto the police. I'd possibly and probably totally shut the computer down and then worry about taking all the details off at another time, because I think if you clear your browsing data, that would get rid of what you've just put in. And then if you do like a thorough virus scan or whatever ever on it, it would probably then clear off all the details that you've inputted. But once it's been taken from their end, I think it's really, really difficult because these hackers are just so too clever, just too clever. So all you can do is stop all your bank cards, stop all anything that you've inputted, like say you've done your credit card, stop that, try and get your bank to stop any money coming out, just put a hold on everything, just to find out what's going on. Other than that, on this end, we really have sort of, as I say, the police, which is the Crime Stopper, or the phishing site run by the Metropolitan Police, and obviously the bank. That will be the two, and then probably put my pants, to be honest, because they've got everything then.
Yeah, Sarah, you're spot on. Contacting the police and contacting your bank is very, very important. I think the sooner you take action, the better chance you have at minimizing the impact. It's also important to play. You can place a fraud alert on your credit reports, you know, like with major bureaus like Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, and monitor from there as well.
Yes, it's important to cover all grounds necessary when you feel that you may have had your information compromised. That leads me into my next question for you guys, which is, and we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but in addition to SSL certificates, what should consumers look for to ensure that they are on a safe website? What else should they look for in addition to an SSL certificate? As we've been discussing what consumers can do once they've realized that they may have been a victim of a cybercrime or some sort of data breach, now we're going to talk about what consumers can do to help themselves stay safe. So my next question for you guys is, what should consumers look for to ensure that they are on a safe website in addition to SSL? And on top of that, what can they do to protect themselves when browsing the web or doing online shopping or just in any application where consumers have to provide sensitive information online in general?
Yes, and I'm gonna give you five words, Christian. HTTPS protocol. That's one of the things that people out there should look for when they are on a website. So look for the HTTPS. Make sure that if a website has the HTTPS, it's more than likely a secure website if they have that URL symbol. So that's one thing to look for. Another thing to verify to make sure that you're on a secure website is to look for privacy policies to ensure that the website has clearly accessible privacy policies that everyone can see and can verify, which help protect users and their data. So that's definitely the second thing to be aware of. A third thing to look for in terms of if you're on a website, if you're trying to make any purchases or use your credit card or anything like that, one of the ways to avoid being scammed or being breached is to make sure that you're reviewing the guidelines of the website, you're reviewing the policies of the website. So you want to make sure you read those things before you accept, because sometimes a lot of people don't even read the policies and procedures of a website. A lot of people just scroll through it, oh, it's too long, I can't read it, and just boom, they accept it without even knowing what they're accepting or they're signing on to. So those are three major things that people want to look out for.
I guess to add to that, Sarah also touched on this a little bit earlier, looking for that S in that HTTP and the padlock symbol. If you take it, I guess, a step further and you click on, I guess it depends on what browser you're using, but if you're using Chrome and you click on the padlock symbol, you see like three different things, like connection to secure, cookies and site data, site settings. And if you click on the connection to secure, you see different options. Certificate is valid. You can click on that. That can show you who gave this site their certificate authority. For an example, I'm actually on a website right now on Google Drive. Google Drive is showing me that it is certified. It's issued by Google themselves. Google Trust Services LLC. So it's important to take a look at these things. On top of that, like what Pierre said, making sure you read the privacy policy. Legitimate websites do have clear privacy policies, so checking for that would definitely be helpful. And also, legitimate websites typically have badges showing that they are trusted, and that's given to them by a third party that's reviewed them. So checking for these things are very, very important. When it comes down to holiday season, a lot of consumers typically would get a lot of phishing emails and phishing links. So making sure that you're not clicking on any link, right? Because in that season, a whole bunch of people are ordering stuff. So like you will see phishing emails from Amazon. That isn't really Amazon. You see phishing emails coming from Walmart and so many different places. Making sure that instead of clicking on a link, you can hover over the link and see where it goes. You can also check the email headers and see who is actually emailing you. If it's actually from Amazon, you see at Amazon without any misspelling or anything like that. But typically, if it is a phishing email or anything like that, you see it coming from a different domain. So we have to, as consumers, we have to be vigilant and pay attention to all these things.
Very well said, guys. That is true. It's important to be vigilant because otherwise you could end up falling for a scam or some sort of phishing attempt. And I've gotten a lot of emails that go straight to my spam box where they pretend that they are from Amazon or UPS or some sort of major corporation. But then when you look at the header, it's some really long cryptic email address. And you look at that and you think, there's no way this can be legitimate. So I would also take it a step further. When you get these emails, contact the company that they claim they're coming from to report them to their fraud department. Now, I have one final question for you guys, and this actually relates less to websites and more towards brick and mortar operations. We have heard about data breaches in the past where many consumers have had their credit card information stolen. The three most recent examples that come to mind are the Target data breach that happened back in 2014, and sometime after that, I also heard about this same data breach occurring at CC's Pizza and Arby's, and it was all the same case. Their credit card information was stolen due to a data breach. So for businesses with brick and mortar operations, what can you guys recommend to help keep credit card transactions secure to prevent these data breaches from occurring?
Just like I said earlier, making sure that you know you update your software for these brick and mortar companies, for the hardwares that they use as well. If you've been using it for way too long and you know like it's been deprecated, you know like it's not being supported by the company that made it, for, you know, software updates or anything like that, change it. Just go ahead and purchase a new hardware and use that, because you have to look at the risk versus the rewards, right? The risk of using a deprecated hardware that isn't being supported anymore, software that isn't being supported anymore, is you being vulnerable to these hackers. Ensure that, you know, secure payment processing is being used, right? And also, like I said before, regularly auditing your things. You have to audit not only, like I said, your hardware and your softwares to make sure that they're working properly, but you have to audit your processes, like the way that you receive payments as well.
To kind of just also just emphasize on some of the things that Kelvin just mentioned, I think it's very important for documentation also as well. You want to document and keep records of communication and transactions, and to take steps towards if case any incident is to happen, you can go back and fact check all your documents and your records to make sure that everything lines up. One thing that's very important in security that a lot of people also don't take notice of is that, you know, as a security organization, to the best way to protect your security is to make sure that you're organized as an organization also. So like I was speaking about earlier, you know, you have to make sure that you can keep records, tracks of communication, transactions, so you can always double back on certain information to make sure that it matches up in case of any, you know, security breaches or any security incidents. So I think that's also a big factor that a lot of consumers or a lot of businesses or just, you know, regular employees or regular people should take account of in terms of security overall. That's a big part of security awareness that some people don't even take notice of, is making sure that you are organized. Because if you are not organized as a company or as an individual, you can very much lose track of, you know, records, transaction. And it's easy for you to get scammed that way if you're not keeping up with your records, because you would never really go back to look and notice those unverified transactions that could happen, or, you know, those breaches that you might not even notice if you never go back and check back on your records. So that's something that's very important.
And I want to go back to what I'm really specialized in, which is vendor risk management. As a business owner, I think it's very, very important to check the validity of the security of your third parties. So instead of just randomly choosing to work with a certain vendor because, I don't know, you've seen their ads on Facebook, or you've seen so many ads on Google or something like that, and just going ahead and working with them, you have to make sure you do your due diligence before you work with them. Honestly, that applies to almost every aspect of our lives, not just in businesses. Like, we have to verify and check a lot of things. So just use the same concept in your business and verify that, okay, this vendor that I want to work with is taking security seriously. And the way that you can do that is honestly by reaching out to the vendor and asking for certain documents like their security policies. You can go through the security policies and see, okay, they're implementing access control. They're doing vulnerability scanning within their organization. And you as a small business owner can do that because you're a customer and you want to make sure before working or using their services, you want to make sure that they're taking security seriously.
So to sum up what you guys said, it's basically business owners should do a cybersecurity audit on all of their operations, look into their software and hardware, and if they do not know how to do so, they should hire a reputable cybersecurity firm. And when they're looking for a good cybersecurity firm to hire, they should do their due diligence and check to see which one is truly the best one to work with, not based on ads that they saw online, but based on customer experience and testimonials.
That is correct. There are so many different websites where you can like hire security people to check something for you. I think we have Upwork as a platform. You can do that. You have Fiverr, and I'm pretty sure there are other competitors out there that provide those services. So Google is your friend. You can, you know, like search and look for security personnel to help you out. As a business owner, you don't really know what you're doing when it comes down to security.
I was just really going to add that there are things you can look for in an organization to make sure that there are trustworthy organization you want to go and hire in terms of third party. Depending on what you're looking for, there are, you know, you can make sure that the third party organization that you're trying to hire, whether they're ISO certified or they know how to do SOC compliance or things like that. If you can see that on their company background, you can tell that this is a company I can work with, that I can trust, because they have the certification that lets you know where we are more than capable to handle the security for you. So things like that you can look for. If you see an organization that has some kind of certification in cybersecurity that proves that they're able to do an audit for you, then that's one way you can make sure that, you know, that's a trustworthy organization in case people don't know what to look for, you know, in terms of how do I make sure I trust this third party? How do I make sure I trust what they're saying they're going to do is what they're going to do? So there's a certain things you can look for, you know, that helps strengthen that point of view.
It's important for both the consumer and the business owner to both have a general understanding of what cybersecurity really is. So with that being said, I'm going to ask Sarah to share her story about what happened to her in terms of being a cybercrime victim. What I would like for you to do, Sarah, is please share your story. And I'm going to ask Kelvin and Pierre to give us their take on what happened. Please go ahead and tell us what happened that day when you realized that you had become a victim of a major cybercrime.
Yeah, it was about 8 years ago and I was at work, happily doing whatever I was doing. And it was only when I was called to the office, the manager's office, and they sat me down and they said, "We've got some people on the phone." So I said, "Right." They said, "Oh, they're from cybercrime unit in the UK." So I said, "Okay." So they said they want to speak to you in private. Anyway, so everyone cleared the room and I picked up the phone. And these people said, explained who they were. They were from the cybercrime unit in the UK, and there was a problem with my credit card. So I said, "Okay, so what's wrong with my credit card?" They said, "I don't know if you've got your statement in the post yet." I was like, "No, not yet. But we've got a feeling that your card's been cloned, but we need you to find out all your details first." So I said, "Okay." Anyway, so I said, "Well, I can't do anything now because I'm at work." So anyway, so the next day I sorted out. But in the meanwhile, I managed to find the statement, which finally come through the next day. And someone had racked up, I think it was about £3,000 worth of stuff from all over the country. It wasn't just from locally, it was all over the country. And it was all different items, from shoes to tellies to computers, all sorts of things. I hadn't noticed anything, because my credit card statement had been paid and then before the, you know, the next statement was due. So anyway, so needless to say, come in. There was a team of people then come in. There was two people, there's a lady and I think there was a man. And they come in and got pulled to the office again and everyone had to leave. And they said, "Right, now you've given us the details, which is great. And we want to explain to you what's happened. We think somebody in the store that you work with has cloned your card." So I said, "Okay, but you must not say anything to anybody at all, because we will be investigating all these 170 people. It's going to take a long time, but we will get there eventually. And you can't tell them anything. You can't tell them why we're here or anything, because we're going to be here for quite a while. So I went, oh, okay. So I said, what do I do in the meanwhile? They said, don't worry about it. You know, your credit card has been stopped. We don't think any of the things that are on there you've done, because they said we've got the records of when you was at work and when the money was taken out. They said because you can't be in Scotland and be in Essex at the same time at work using a credit card. I said no. So I said I want to know how they've done it and where it's all come from. They said, well, this is what we're going to investigate. Anyway, so I went away and I carried on with my day, but I was just looking at everybody I worked with thinking, those people have cloned my card. They've stolen, you know, they want me to pay money on this credit card. Anyway, so what happened was they'd done all their investigation. It took a few months. It turned out that it wasn't anybody in the store at all. It was somebody who worked for MasterCard. They had infiltrated my card amongst two others in a transaction that was localized at the head office. They'd cloned the cards, these three cards, and mine happened to be one of them. And they was just spending, not too much to make it look obvious, but just enough for it to be flagged up as being cyber crimes. But unfortunately, they said to me, I have to pay it, and then they can then claim it back, which is what I had to do. So I had to pay, I think it was about 2,800 and something pound, whatever it was. And then I got that money back, thankfully. But I didn't trust anyone after that. And I am now, although I do online shopping, I am still wary about giving my card details, even if it's a proper website. So yeah, that's my story.
That's interesting. It's funny that while you were speaking, I had a feeling that it wasn't anybody at where you work. My mind went straight to, oh, your card information was probably sold on a black market, since like it was being shown that it was being used in, within the country. Is that what you said, Sarah?
In the same country, within the United Kingdom, yeah, but in Scotland. I live in Essex. So right. You've got Scotland, which is the top of the United Kingdom. You've got Wales, which is sort of to the left of the United Kingdom. Then you've got Essex. There was nothing from around Essex, Hertfordshire, anywhere around me. It was all up north.
Right.
Which I've not been up north, so it's not me. Yeah. And I can't be in two places at once. I can't be using a credit card and be at work at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what they had to monitor. They had to monitor me as well.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah.
It's very, very unfortunate.
Scary. Yeah. Scary.
These things happen so often. Bad people will try to steal, you know, people information, and it happens way too often. And I think it is up to us as consumers to try and get as much information as possible and learn as much as possible. I'm not really familiar with the payment card industry or the banking industry in the EU, but I know like for here, I bank with Chase. And typically the way that they work, if there has been an incident like that, they will pay it themselves and then they will do the investigation. So for an example, in your case, like if that was to happen to me and I report that to Chase, Chase would pay that £300. So let's say if I had a balance of zero, now I have £300, and Chase would then pay the £300, balance would be zero while they do their investigation and figure out what happened. You're not wrong for not wanting to use your card on websites. You're not wrong.
I'm just wary. I do use it, but I'm very wary. I know I've got more protection with a credit card than a debit card.
Than with a debit card, correct.
Yeah.
But I believe, you know, like with the information that we've learned here, you know, like checking whether the website that you're on is encrypted.
Everything was secure. Everything was fine. It was just when I'd purchased on an official site,
right?
But when the card transact, because obviously it gets authorized at MasterCard, which is the main person, because you have Visa, MasterCard, and all that. It was one of those people at head office who was processing those transactions that's cloning the card.
Yeah. So let me ask you, do you know what happened to that person?
That person got fired.
Got fired.
And fined.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Because they told me that person's got dismissed along with two others who were the people who were helping buying stuff around the country with the other two cards. Mm-hmm. So it was three of them that cloned the cards.
Right. And then they gave you a different card number and all of that, correct?
Yeah. Everything was changed. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure, like, if you have a password protected, like, portal to check, you know, like the balances and stuff like that.
No, I don't have one on that one, no. But the PIN code, they said change the PIN number and everything, so which I did.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah, so everything just got wiped and started again, if you know what I mean. So
Yeah.
They couldn't apologize enough, but it doesn't help. You know, you're still a victim at the end of the day.
Yep. It's unfortunate. You know, these companies, they have contingency plans in place. They have policies and procedures in place for when these things happen, and which it sounds like they followed it to a T. So, and they were able to. They,
They come in like men in black first.
They come in.
That was quite scary. Yeah. They have these dark glasses and black and white suits. I mean, come on.
Yeah. That can be a very scary sight.
And then they're like, right, you've got to come in here. And everyone's like, what's she doing going in there? What's she done? No, I haven't done anything.
I haven't done anything. You have to explain yourself to everybody.
I weren't allowed to say anything. So I just said, oh, they just wanted me to ask me some questions. That was it.
Which doesn't even make it better, because like Men in Black come and then they request to see you alone in the room and you come back out saying, you know, most people.
It is. It's like your mind's been zapped.
Why was you haven't done anything?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just to piggyback on your experience, Sarah, I mean, like you said before, when they hacked your account, they weren't taking a huge amount. They were only taking a little bit for you not to notice, but enough to get flagged, which is what happens a lot of the times, which is why it's important to go back and check back on your bank statements and to look at your deposits and look at all the transactions that's been going on, because that way you can catch on to some of these attacks sooner if you're constantly reviewing and monitoring your account and checking your bank statements and checking your transactions. You'll be able to get, you know, hackers and attacks sooner. So just wanted to mention that. But
they done that all in one day, though. They took out 2,800 something pounds worth of stuff all in one day. That's why it flagged up. They've done it in little bits, but over one whole day, because I think they knew they'd get found out if they left it over a few days.
Yes.
So they done it all in one day, and they done the same with the others. I think they said they took about 1,000 or 2,000 pounds of the others, but mine was the one with the more on it. They had more expensive taste, apparently.
Apparently so.
Funny that you bring that up here, because I've actually had an experience. I have the Apple card, right? And fortunately, with any other banking card, with most banking cards, I have visibility literally with every spending, any transaction that happens. It shows where I spent money, at what location, and at what time. So a couple of months ago, I saw little transactions, and it would be like from Facebook. And I didn't recognize these transactions. So I reached out to Goldman Sachs, the company that takes care of the Apple card. And so I reached out to them and I let them know, like, hey, there's been multiple Facebook transactions of $6 over the past 6 months, and it's been happening. I'm not really sure what's happening, because this is not me. And they take security very, very seriously. They immediately changed the card number. They immediately refunded the amount of money that I reported and went ahead and did their investigations and came back to me, letting me know that they've taken care of whatever, you know, they needed to take care of. But it's very, very important that we monitor our transactions and make sure that they're correct, because there are hackers out there, or bad actors out there, that will take out little by little so that you don't notice. So yeah, that's a good point, Pierre.
I'd like to throw this tip for listeners out there who use different methods of payment. Always remember that certain methods of payment, such as Zelle, for example, are not FDIC insured. So just remember that. If you end up having your money stolen due to a fraudulent attempt that was conducted via Zelle or a similar platform, chances are you're not going to get your money back. So always make sure that whatever you're using has some sort of avenue of restoration should your account end up getting drained due to a fraudulent transaction. Sarah, I'm really sorry to hear that you went through that ordeal. That definitely sounds extremely terrifying, and not only terrifying, but embarrassing. But in the end, everything was worked out and you were able to get your life back in order again. You're one of the most vigilant people I know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but would you say this incident is the reason why you are so vigilant now versus maybe a few years ago?
Yeah, I would say so, Christian. What with that and us watching Trilogy Media with scams and things, I hate those people. people. Scammers, hackers, they're all the same.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. And thank you guys for sharing all of these wonderful tips. We hope that the audience finds them very useful. I hope that the small business community out there now has a better view on cybersecurity and are taking the proper steps now to make sure that their platforms are secure and that they're ready to handle an influx of customers. Sarah, thank you once again for sharing your input as a consumer and telling us what you look out for to make sure you stay safe. I really want to see other consumers who listen to this show follow your advice as well, because you shared a lot of great tips. Everybody here all shared some great tips for both the small business and the consumer world to follow. And if you follow this advice, you can expect to see your customers happy, confident, and feeling great knowing that their information was handled, and consumers feeling great knowing that they will not be shopping at any dangerous or dodgy websites. They'll be having a better eye for certain things to make sure that they truly are on a legitimate, secure website and that their information will not get hacked and stolen. Thank you guys for coming on the show. I hope you'll have a great
day.
Thanks,
brother.
Yes, thank you, sister. I wish you all a great day, and thank you for listening to the CDG BizCast.